Guardian Unlimited.
Howard Barker is one of the most distinctive voices in European theatre. His plays are typically set during periods of social upheaval and confusion, which produce extremes of behaviour that Barker is careful to leave audiences to judge for themselves. Poetic, often violent, and unashamedly complex, these stories haven't always gone down well with this country's theatrical establishment. In the past 3 years, there have been 27 productions of Barker plays in 6 languages in many different countries, but just 3 in the UK. In a production by the Wrestling School, the theatre company set up by members of the RSC to explore Barker's work, The Seduction of Almighty God arrives at the Riverside Studios for a limited run this week. I came to meet Howard Barker, who began by outlining the typically unusual story behind this play.
It's set at the time of the dissolution of the monasteries during the English Reformation, the 1530s, in a monastery that is pretty well derelict, but for a handful of monks who live there. And it tells the arrival of a very devout young man whose love of God is very much out of date in this kind of secular climate. And he joins the monastery, and by the force of his personality, but also because of his peculiar innocence, really, he exerts a lot of authority over the other monks and discovers in his imagined intimacy with God that he has extraordinary powers, and one of these powers is that he can eliminate the enemies of the monastery.
This power he has bestowed on me, this wishing people to death. If God hates, and we know he does, hate so extensively, why does he not simply, on his own account, remove from them the life he gave them? Why me? I'm only 17. I come to serve God.
This story unfolds at a time when England is still a more or less Catholic country, but your central figure, Loftus, doesn't seem at all Catholic. And my impression of him was more of a Protestant character. He doesn't seem to have much interest in the institutions of the church. His faith seems to be a very solitary one.
Well, he is solitary, of course. In fact, he is solitary. He's pretty well on his own in this place. The people who surround him are either corrupt or on their way somewhere else. So in a way, his religion is self-made. I agree with that.
Shelter my faith? Or does it embarrass you? Don't be embarrassed by my faith.
You are a prig and a poseur, and all you want's a room.
The same was said of Christ. And yes, I want a room.
A room for what?
To argue with the angels in.
Argue with the angels in your father's house?
This is my father's house.
Your dad's, I mean.
He has too many children.
Is that so?
The noise inhibits contemplation.
Too bad.
Not just the noise. The noise I think I might reach an accommodation with, but they mock my faith.
His more or less sort of perfect, unfaltering conviction of his relationship with God gives him a kind of charisma, considerable charisma. But the power he comes to exert over those around him is enhanced by what appear to be quite unearthly powers of life and death, as you've mentioned. What led you to invent those?
I don't know, it's just an invention. I mean, in a sense, he does wish people to death, doesn't he? And when he discovers this rather appalling gift, he is initially quite troubled by it. Then he finds a theological basis for it, namely that God himself is so exhausted with the world that he has demarcated that gift to one of his young followers. And then, of course, he becomes, in a sense, corrupted by it in wanting to kill people himself, not exactly randomly. So what arrives as something which appalls him turns into something which he finds a convenient facility.
Yes, he's corrupted in his own way, or maybe that's not how you see it.
Yeah, I suppose he's corrupted by it. I don't know, it's interesting, because if I say he's corrupted by it, it implies I have a moral exercise of some kind to carry out in this play, and as you all know, I don't think morally. I don't think dramatists ought to think morally. So he's autonomous. The play wrote itself, as they tend to with me. And that autonomy involves him possibly becoming immoral or not. I don't know. It's a judgment.
To which you like to leave the audience to make up their own minds about.
Traditionally, that's my way of working. Yes, I don't set out with a thesis. And I certainly don't have a moral attitude. Well, not that I'm aware of. In my work, of course, I've got lots of views about everything. Who hasn't? Whether the views of dramatists and artists are of any interest at all is a moot point, actually. One asks the dramatist to create a language and to create situations. Whether you care what he actually thinks is a separate issue. About the world by someone who knows. It seems to me that's the sort of fallacy of the Brechtian school which still dominates English theatre, is that someone will invite you into a theatre and then give you a message. And the whole exercise is about delivering that to you. And frankly, I find that tedious and, you know, it diminishes theatre's power, I think.
So, getting back to the seduction of Almighty God.
Show me yourself.
You think me hidden? And obscure, possibly. It's my way. Always.
If you could talk a little bit about the way Loftus's faith and his denial of his own bodily appetites and so on acts on the people around him.
Well, yeah, you used the word, I think you did, used the word charismatic, and it's always interesting what constitutes charisma. It seems to me that some of the charisma of the priesthood originates in its denial of normal life, if you like, of which sexuality is a huge element. Someone who, in a celibate way, isolates himself from the community and by an effort of will, because it must be an effort of will supremely, denies a function of the body which is that compelling, inevitably exercises a certain fascination over those who live with those actions. So to be a celibate priest, in essence, is already something which lends, I think, a certain power to somebody. Now, if he's also, as this character is, an articulate thinker about theology, about God, and who on top of that claims a rather terrifying intimacy with God, then you have a lot of the ingredients of a Savonarola-type person.
Naked. If you will be naked, so will I. I'm neat. 4 pregnancies and still... girl neat. Girl perfect.
I sometimes think I was called not at all for my own salvation, but for the salvation of the priesthood. So very low is the priesthood, so smeared and faithless, that it comes as no surprise to me that a woman might expect a priest to welcome such an invitation. The fault lies with the priesthood, surely.
4 pregnancies and none, I'm certain, from my husband.
I am at a loss to understand why you advertise your misdemeanours. When a man made party to such information, far from inclining to you, must recoil, surely.
Are you recoiling?
Yes. Oh, yes, I am.
And then I made an error.
I mean, one's talking about seduction here. What is the essence of seduction? There are so many ways of seducing another, one of which is to be powerful, but the other is to be weak. One is to be knowledgeable, the other is to be ignorant. Women are drawn to strong men, but they're also drawn to men who are not strong. You know, and these are all parts of the same mechanism of seduction.
I was wondering whether there were contemporary trends which were feeding into your interest in this period.
No, you're talking about the rise of fundamentalism in East and
yes,
West.
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, the play's 8 years old. It's not a new play. It predates what we think of as the religious war that's upon us. But then that's often been my way. I mean, I wrote several plays about Islam's conflict with Europe long before all this started.
So familiarity with deep history gives you some sort of unexpected familiarity with what's going on.
Well, I think that's true, yeah. I mean, that's why the history play is a good thing, because it's a metaphor. It enables you to escape some of the crushing documentary factuality about the world and indulge a little speculation, and you can do that in a historical period.
We used to sleep in dormitories, 20, 30 to a room, if sleep's the word. And every other hour, prayers, cold floor, the winter reaching underneath the door. And knees, imagine it. Knees are not made to crouch, though. Bones not stone. For in the morning, February, damp, oh.
And as you mentioned, you've characterised your own theatre as a theatre of catastrophe, which is very well developed and elaborately conceived idea of how theatre should be conducted. Could you give us a sketch, an idea of how that works for us?
A long, long ago, I became very nauseated, is the word, with social realism in the theatre. This drew me in a direction that perhaps very few people really were going, which is into tragedy. There's a sort of conventional wisdom that tragedy is not playable in this time, but I never accepted that. One of the ways I wanted to approach it was to develop a specific language for the stage. My plays are very metaphorical and poetic in a sense, I think. There's a certain stage language in them, which is not social realism. So that enables, I think, a form of tragedy to exist. But what separates my own tragedy from, say, Shakespearean or indeed from Greek tragedy is it's morally vacuous or morally evacuated. In the tragedy to take, you know, King Lear or something, one watches the progress of the protagonist towards death, and death's crucially important in tragedy. It's the key to it. But at the end, in a sense, one's watching, in the end, a reparation. There's a kind of collusion between the dramatist and the audience at the end to restore the normal values of society. In my work, the protagonist is so outside, is delivered from society by a crisis, that he or she then makes up their own moral values. They tend to end up in solitude, they tend to end up dead, but there's no reconciliation between the public and the stage at the end of that. They're open. The audience has to make its own judgment about what it's seen.
I must. In everybody's interest, I must. And it's difficult, I'm so young. I must stop hating. But what if this hatred is inflamed by God? Is in effect God's own hatred? What if I am, so to speak, elected to be the bearer of God's hate? To attempt to eradicate what might be, however burdensome to me, nevertheless, the will of God. To cleanse my soul as one might strip the backbone from a fish, surely would cause him grave offence.
Right, so this is part of it. You want to return a kind of moral freedom to the audience.
Exactly that. Of course, that gives them problems because they're so used to being spoon-fed about what they should think that they're a bit disturbed and sometimes very uncomfortable when they find something that's not resolved in that way.
You do seem to have a gift for winding up the theatrical establishment in this country. Do you have an active sense of why that is?
It's something to do with my attitude. I mean, it's no good people saying perhaps you know, they don't like me or they think I'm elitist or something, because when it comes down to it, you know, the theatre's job is to put plays on, not to worry about whether the author's got horns or not. So the question is, why don't they actually want to do the text? It comes back to the text. And I think what we were just talking about is crucial to it. The whole mainstream of English theatre is predicated on its socio-critical functioning. And I think particularly people who run national theatre companies are made very anxious by writers like me who simply don't provide that ideological basis. I mean, the National Theatre is not called the National Theatre for nothing. It is the national ideology which is on display there. If you stand outside that, as I tend to, then I don't think you're going to be very welcome.
But luckily for you, actors love performing.
They're my best friends, yes, in theatre, certainly. I mean, the rest of the school wouldn't have happened as a company if certain some dedicated actors hadn't got together to sort of set it up.
Well, Howard Barker, thank you very much indeed for talking to us.
Thank you.
Guardian Unlimited.